What is your relationship between wounding and violence?
Well, I've always been very interested in the consequences of violence over time and the ways in which violence reverberates across time and place, affecting not just those who are directly involved, but also the people who love them, the people who are in the communities that were affected, and even future generations.
Hello and welcome to The Right Question, a radio program and podcast featuring authors from the Western United States. Our funding comes from Humanities Montana and members of Montana Public Radio. I'm Sarah Aronson. If I sound a bit different, it's because I'm recording this part of the program from a makeshift studio at home. In March 2020, I had the pleasure of speaking with S.M. Hulse about her second novel, Eden Mine. You won't want to miss this. Eden Mine examines the aftershocks of an act of domestic terrorism rooted in a small Montana town on the brink of abandonment. And Sarah, you triangulate relationships between a disaffected young man, his sister Jo, a pastor, and a sheriff. Why those characters?
I think I started being very interested in this book when I was thinking about what would it be like to love someone who had done something truly terrible. And Jo, the protagonist of the book, is, you know, a young woman who is trying to come to terms with the fact that someone she loves and someone who has always been very good to her, her brother Samuel, has done something awful. He's committed an act of domestic terrorism that has very seriously harmed people and caused harm not just to individuals but to community. So she was definitely the center of the book from very early on. I am interested in questions of faith, belief. I think this book is very engaged with belief systems, not just religious, but also why do we believe what we believe? Why do we reject certain belief systems? So Asa, the pastor character, was sort of a natural venue to kind of explore some of those pieces. And I enjoyed the sheriff because I'm really interested in the ways in which sort of the stories that have been told about the West or the mythologies we've heard about the West impact people living in the West today. So the sheriff was sort of an avenue to look at the ways in which people try to live up to some of those stereotypes or those archetypes and the ways in which that does and does not play out well in the contemporary West.
I can't wait to talk about Jo more and about those themes, but I was hoping you would just take us into the book.
My brother's bomb explodes at 10:16 on a late April Sunday morning. I don't know. I'm 150 miles northwest, in the house he and I share. I've just taped together the first cardboard moving box, and it sits on the hardwood before me, yawning empty. Later, I'll imagine the explosion with such regularity and intensity the details become etched in my mind alongside my own memories, sharp-edged and indelible. I'll be hounded by those details, haunted. The shattering glass, thousands of jagged pieces slicing the air, capturing and fracturing the light, the enormity of the sound, the brute physicality of it, and then its numbing absence, the clouding dust, the crumbling rubble, the blood. But at 10:16, I know nothing, packing my biggest problem. 12 injured, one critically. A child, the daughter of the pastor of the church across the street from the bomb. Services barely begun, only the first hymn sung, the first reading spoken. The child's father prays over her for the 3 minutes it takes her to lose consciousness. For the 4 minutes more, it takes the paramedics to arrive. He cradles her as he prays, and he'll find flecks of red on his skin and under his nails for days afterward. So much blood, he will say. So fast. I don't know any of this. There's no tingle at the back of my neck, no sudden catch of breath at the moment of detonation. I have no idea. None until the radio cuts off the newest country star in the midst of his climb up the weekly countdown, replaces his easy twang with the clipped voice of a reporter. If my gut contracts when I hear the word courthouse, it is only because we got bad news there not long ago. If I try calling Samuel's cell phone, and then try again, and again, it is simply because a person wants to talk to family after a disaster like this, and he is the only family I have. And if what I feel when the knock comes and I open the door to the sheriff, is not exactly surprise. Well, that's just the shock.
This book is called A Timely Story of the Anger and Disaffection Tearing Apart Many Communities in This Country, and you take on humiliation and rage. And I was hoping you could talk about the relationship between collapse of industry, humiliation, rage, and violence.
I think I've always been kind of interested in the ways in which rural communities and people who live in rural communities do sometimes feel that the people who make a lot of the decisions that govern their lives are not very connected to their way of life. I grew up in the Inland Northwest and have become very interested in the ways in which maybe that sort of frontier mentality that we kind of laud in the West, the independent spirit that we tend to praise as sort of a regional culture, can sometimes tip over into sort of forms of extremism. And I think that that does tend to happen when people feel that their way of life is not respected, it's not being heard or seen, the decisions that are being made by people who are not affected by those decisions do affect them. So that was certainly at play in this book, which takes place in a sort of dying mining town, or really a dead mining town. The mines that sort of sustained the town and built the town have been closed for about 20 years at the start of the novel. And that's one of the tensions in the book, is Joe, the protagonist, realizing that she really loves this place and it is her home, and she feels very rooted there, even as she's sort of working to see its flaws with clearer eyes, in a way that sort of mirrors the way she's now having to look at her brother.
And one of the things we learn about Jo is that she's in a wheelchair, and she's also a horsewoman. And Sarah, you tackle ableism in the book, and I was really curious about that choice to make your protagonist in a wheelchair. And I was also wondering, what were you nudging the readers to learn?
I think sort of the experience of living with disability in the West has become very interesting to me in my writing. My first book, Black River, involved a character with a physical disability, and I think my third novel might also involve disability, possibly neurological disability. And I think this is interesting to me, again, to explore the ways in which people, real people who live in the West, don't always fulfill these stereotypes or can't to some extent. And so Jo was a fascinating character to me because in some ways she's not what people envision. She did suffer a spinal cord injury as a child. She does use a wheelchair. And in some ways she is. She rides her mule. She goes up in the woods. She loves nature. She spends a lot of time in nature. And so portraying her just as a fully fledged person, where her disability is really just one aspect of her identity. When I conceived of the character, it wasn't, this is a character with a disability. It was, this is a character who is a young woman. This is a character who lives in the rural West. This is a character who loves horses and mules. This is a character who is a visual artist. This is a character who uses a wheelchair. It's one aspect of that. And I think that's one reason why in the book, which is told from her perspective, as you mentioned, we don't, as readers, learn about her disability in the very first pages. We learn about it when she encounters a character who would notice it for the first time. And that was important to me because it was a way to show that Jo has lived with her disability for a long time, and it's not the first and foremost thing on her mind at all times.
Just in terms of craft, how did you go about doing, research or getting a sense of what it would be like to live with a disability like that?
I do a lot of research for the books, and I do a lot of different kinds of research. Some of it is, certainly reading memoirs of people who have lived with spinal cord injuries, reading sort of more textbook-style things. I've found the internet incredibly useful, partly because as useful as it can be to talk to a single individual or talk to people in your life who might be living with disability, there were times where I did wonder, okay, so how would this character get on a horse? What would this character do if she were going to spend time in the woods for weeks on end? And so it was very useful to me to be able to, say, go to message boards for people living with spinal cord injury where they were talking with each other about the ways in which they, say, went camping. And, of course, those experiences weren't all identical. People had, different approaches, different techniques. And that was really useful to me to get kind of a broad perspective on what that was. And that is important to me, to recognize that when I am doing that kind of research, it needs to fit into the character. Mm-hmm. Jo is not meant to represent all people living with spinal cord injuries or all people who use wheelchairs. The decisions she makes and the things that are important to her relating to that aspect of her life are tied into all the other aspects of her life.
Sure. It struck me so much that all of the females in the book are missing, dead, or injured. Tell me about that.
You know, I am very interested in sort of men's role in the West, in the contemporary West. So many of these sort of classic stories we think of, the sort of cowboy stories that were very popular in, say, the mid-20th century, are about kind of the ways in which men are supposed to be in the West. And that's something I certainly explored in the first book, Black River, and I do think is explored here. The three main characters who are not Joe, her brother Samuel, the pastor Asa, and the sheriff Hawkins are all, I think, trying to fulfill that kind of role of protector in very different ways and sometimes in destructive ways. But it was also interesting to have Joe be my protagonist because I was interested, again, in the ways in which she kind of explores that as well. You know, the women in some of those classic stories are often absent, which I think plays into some of why so many of them are in the book. And Jo really doesn't have a lot of role models who are female. So she is kind of finding her own way in many ways. But she is also kind of grappling with that sense of what it means to be a Western woman, where, you know, in those classic stories, you're supposed to be able to go brand the calf and then cook it up real deliciously, preferably while wearing a skirt. And so she is, I think, exploring, you know, what does it mean to be a woman in the contemporary West, a woman who uses a wheelchair in the contemporary West, a woman who's the most important people in her life are men, but whom she's not necessarily interested in putting her life aside for them. And so in some ways it is kind of a coming of age novel where she is, you know, really sort of forced to decide what she wants her life to look like going forward and how she's going to make that happen on her own.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to a conversation with S.M. Hulse about her novel Eden Mine, which explores the aftershocks of an act of domestic terrorism rooted in a small Montana town. I'm Sarah Aronson. This is The Right Question. Our full conversation can be found online at mtpr.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Facebook. What does it mean to have family loyalty in these types of communities and around these types of acts? I know you mentioned it at the beginning. You know, what does it mean to love someone who's done something terrible? But, like, talk to me about that theme of family loyalty.
It was interesting to me when writing the book, and in some ways it's become even more interesting while revising it and seeing it published. I wrote a draft of this book, you know, quite a few years ago. The first draft was finished, I think, in the summer of 2016. And then to see the ways in which maybe politics and ideas have divided families, even when people are not actually, you know, doing any acts other than expressing opinions, has made this book really interesting to consider a very extreme version of that. Can you still love someone who not only thinks things you disagree with, but has actually done something that is objectively wrong and horrible? And, you know, it was tricky to write, particularly because it's from Joe's perspective, and she is inclined, especially early in the book, to try and mitigate or excuse what her brother does. And part of her journey over the course of the book is recognizing that she can't do that. She does have to really face what he has done and recognize that there is no excuse for it. But she also comes to realize, I think, that it is not necessarily a choice between loving her brother and recognizing that what he's done is very wrong. And I think that is something that's very interesting to me in looking at family. Is it possible to disapprove of or even hate something that someone you love thinks or does, but to still love that person and to still hope that you might be a positive influence in that person's life, which I think is something that Joe tries to do throughout the book.
When I think about the mining operations and the working class of America, I'm tying in, you know, their sense of faith in believing in an industry, and then what does it mean to have their faith shaken when the industry collapses, and then also just this terrorist act and faith and evil. There's a cyclone here of faith, belief, safety, these kinds of things. Walk us into the role of faith in the book.
Well, I love writing about faith, both in the sense of religious faith and specific religious faith. I mostly write about sort of Protestant Christian faith in that sense, but also in larger senses, as you've alluded to there. I think one of the characters we see that most strongly in is Samuel, who over the course of the book tries on and discards a lot of belief systems. He is, to some extent, a seeker, but not necessarily in a positive way. He's a character who suffered a lot of trauma early in life and is looking for some kind of framework to help him deal with that. And some of the frameworks he chooses are not helpful. And so that was interesting to me in the sense of how do we make sense of the things that happen to us in life and how do we make sense of the things we do. And I think we see that on a community scale in the book as well. And in many small communities, this is a place that has a sense of its identity that is tied to a mining industry that's gone. And it has also tried to reinvent itself in several ways, most of which have not worked. Through some of the characters, we see that people who live there are trying to come to terms with the fact that they need to reframe their understanding and that perhaps faith is more complicated than it's going to seem. Faith that it's just going to work out somehow or that the town will be what it once was. It's become apparent to them that that's not true. And in a religious sense, we see sort of a similar journey with Asa the pastor, who has a faith early on in the book based on a specific incident in his life in which he believes he laid on hands and healed somebody. But then he can't do that for his daughter, who was injured in the blast. And so we see that he has to kind of reframe his faith. He is a pastor. His religion and his faith are the most important things in his life, but they're not working in the same way for him that they have before. And so I'm really interested in how do we choose these belief systems? Do we choose them at all? What do we do when they're challenged? And again, that's on both an individual and a community level.
And I'm thinking about, you know, Asa, the pastor whose daughter was injured in the blast, becomes close with Joe, and Joe is also close with the Sheriff Hawkins. And it's a really interesting triangular relationship. It's not exactly romantic, but there is intimacy. And I want you to position Joe between faith, the law, and outlaws. You know, what made her able to relate to these two other characters?
I think Joe is someone who sees deeply. She observes. She's an artist. She's a visual artist. She notices things, and she reflects on those things. Part of her artistic journey is moving from kind of portraying the West in this romanticized fashion and then kind of moving toward portraying it in a more realistic fashion that nonetheless shows her love for the place. And I think that's something we see in her interactions with other characters, too, to a sense. She does, you know, make some assumptions about Asa when she meets him. He's a pastor. She finds herself revising her understanding of what she thinks a pastor should be as she gets to know Asa. With the sheriff, you know, they have a long history, and she's often in this book trying to kind of determine, you know, there's one point in the book where she says something like, "Are you here as a sheriff or a friend?" Mm-hmm. And that's something that's a little uneasy between them. You know, the sheriff sees himself as a bit of a guardian to Joe and Samuel, but at the same time, he is tasked with helping, you know, apprehend Samuel, who they believe has committed this act. And so she is willing to kind of see people in a new light, to incorporate her previous understandings of people into new understandings of them. And I really liked writing that about her as a character. I liked that she was a character who doesn't necessarily replace her understanding of other people when new information comes to light, but tries to integrate it. And that's sometimes a messy and uneven process. But it was really interesting to see her, and I think that's how she can be someone who has close relationships with her brother, the terrorist, with the sheriff who is looking for him, with a pastor whose family was grievously wounded by her brother. It would take a special person to do that, and Joe doesn't necessarily see herself as trying to do those things, but I loved writing a character who was able to.
You're right. There's nothing static about these relationships or characters. It's a constant evolution against the backdrop of, as you said, the character of the landscape. So talk to me about how you use the landscape as a character, you know, which is commonly done in Western, quote unquote, Western literature. But what made it special to you? What were you trying to bring forth?
I think in this book, I loved the way in which it sort of reflected that relationship between Joe and Samuel. You know, as we've said, Joe has to say, I love this person, he's done something awful. Her relationship with the landscape over the course of the book and the way it's portrayed is doing something similar. It's, I love this place, it is my home, it's been damaged. So she thinks a lot about the beauty. She is sort of poetic when she thinks about the mountains because she thinks very deeply about how to paint them, how to portray them on the page. But she also recognizes she lives in a property that has serious environmental damage as a result of the mining that went on for generations. She cares about the place, but also recognizes that there's a reason the tourists don't come to her town. They don't want to see sort of the remnants of the mines. Some of the reinvention the town attempted couldn't be done because of this pollution. So she is trying to understand for herself, can I love this place and recognize that it has flaws and that some of the things my family and the other families who lived here did cause damage to it? And I really enjoyed exploring that through her art over the course of the book and watching her move as an artist from someone who thought of it as sort of a practical way to make money, kind of a give the tourists what they want, I will paint things the way they would like to spend money for them. Two, she literally becomes to incorporate the earth itself into her art. She begins painting with mud and to see sort of a more nuanced portrait of the place.
I'm so glad you brought up her artistic facet. There's a moment of tension in the book when her art is sought after by a fancy gallery because she did a piece of art that features the destruction of the building. And you write that Joe pushes back against selling this piece of art to the gallery. And I just wanted to know, what were you commenting on there about, sort of high art and maybe wealth disparity and also exploitation?
It was an important moment for Joe to me. That's the moment when she really sees herself as an artist. Early in the book, she says, I'm not an artist the way people mean. She kind of disparages her own talent to a certain extent and thinks of it as sort of a means to get a few dollars for groceries. And I think when she starts to incorporate the earth into her art and starts to include things like, pieces of the mine or the courthouse that her brother bombed, that's where we see her trying to incorporate these more complicated things we've talked about into her art. And so I think that's the point at which, even if she doesn't realize it until that moment in the gallery, she is putting art above practicality, and she is not willing to compromise that anymore in a way that previously she probably would have just said, well, I'm being practical. I'm doing what I need to do. It doesn't bother me if someone else wants this for whatever reason. And I really enjoyed writing that scene and sort of seeing the character grow for herself. And I think it's a point that a lot of artists of any stripe reach, which is to say, this is important to me, this act of creation matters, and it matters to me whether or not other people approve of it or will pay money for it.
Sarah, it's so clear to me sitting here with you how well you know the ins and the outs of your characters, especially the protagonist. What's your relationship with your characters, and especially Joe? How does Joe come to you, and how did you, I imagine you crafted her and she also crafted through you.
Yeah, it's a book I had to do a lot of revision on. I tell people I have 30 manuscript boxes filled with this book in my apartment right now. And I think that reflects the fact that while the book is very much as I conceived it originally in many ways, and the characters are who I wanted them to be, it took some work to get that onto the page. There was a point, I think, after I sent the first draft of it to my editor, where in our conversations, it became really clear that while Joe was, very alive and complex in my head, much of that had not actually made it onto the page. So I've discovered that I tend to kind of think structurally in early stages. So a lot of things were in place in terms of what happens when, how do they come together, where do you move from Joe's perspective to one of Samuel's letters, for example. Mm-hmm. But I had to play a lot with some of the other aspects of the book. I knew Joe's voice would always be the strongest one, but I actually wrote a complete draft of it in the third person rather than the first person it's in now. So I had to redo that. I played with the verb tense, and a lot of it was finding the right moments for her, the right kinds of interiority. Where do we see her really reflect? Where do we see her reject that reflection, especially early in the book? Where is she not willing to think about things? And coming up with those moments and putting on the page the ways in which she is sort of trying to reconcile everything going on with her brother and her town was challenging because to a certain extent, her thoughts and her feelings are very contradictory through much of the book. She kind of goes back and forth in how she's thinking about her brother. She's defensive, then she's angry. And I think these are all sort of probably very realistic responses, especially for this character. But it took some time to figure it out. And while that process was sometimes frustrating, I think in the end, it helped make sure that that complexity was there.
My last question relates to your pen name and what it means to write this type of literature. S.M. Hulse, as you had mentioned before the interview, it's gender neutral. But what does it mean to you to really write like nobody could pin you down as a woman?
It's been very interesting. The gender neutral name S.M. Hulse was something my first publisher had asked me to do when they were starting to think about sales and marketing. My first novel, Black River, was from the perspective of a man. I do sometimes wonder if I would have been asked to do that had Eden Mine been my first book, which is from the perspective of a woman. But it was something that was left up to me. I could have said no, and I could have published as Sarah Hulse had I chosen to. But I tended to yield to what the sales and marketing people wanted. I said, these people's job is to sell books, and if this maybe encourages some people to pick up the book who otherwise wouldn't, great. It has been interesting how many sort of reviews on, say, Amazon or Goodreads or something like that I've had that said something like, I was so surprised to find out this author was a woman, or even emails through my website, I didn't know you were a woman. And I think generally that's intended as a compliment, yeah. Especially with the first book. It's people saying, you know, you convinced me about this male character. But it's been interesting because I don't tend to want to call myself a woman author. You know, I do explore some of these questions of masculinity and femininity, especially in the West, but I'm interested in what I'm interested in, and I don't, you know, particularly want to be expected to write certain things or in certain ways or about certain things in certain ways. I very much am one of those authors who, as much as possible, would like my books to stand kind of on their own merits, as I think a lot of us do. So it's been sort of a utilitarian choice, I think, but I'm interested in the ways in which after making that choice, I see that I think a lot of us unconsciously make assumptions about who books are for. Mm-hmm. And we do that based, of course, on covers, on titles, but maybe more than we realize we do it on who the author is. We may not intend to, but I think we do believe women write certain kinds of books, men write certain kinds of books, people from this region write certain kinds of books. I probably, you know, fulfill some of those stereotypes, and I probably push against some of them. So it's been an interesting experiment and one I'm, you know, happy to have done, but I continue to be surprised by the reactions I have from people.
S.M. Hulse is an avid horsewoman and has lived throughout the American West. Her first novel, Black River, was a finalist for the Penn Hemingway Award for Debut Fiction, an Indie Next Pick, and the winner of the Reading the West Book Award. Look for more information about her and her work at mtpr.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Facebook. Many thanks to Humanities Montana for supporting us since 2008. And thanks to you for listening. I'm Sarah Aronson, and this has been The Right Question.
The Right Question is produced by Sarah Aronson, Bo Baker, studio engineer and production assistant. The music in this program was written and performed by John Floridis.